Hi, this is Nick with the Family Gamers on the floor of Gen Con with John Meatling from Portal Dragon Games. How are you doing today?
Doing well, Nick. Thanks for having me.
So what's been the favorite part of your Gen Con so far?
Oh, favorite part. There's so much here. It's the first time being an exhibitor, so it's really cool to see kind of the behind the scenes and be able to talk with some of the other designers and publishers I've been starting to get to know. So it's great to see everybody.
Awesome. Cool. So you recently had some large success with Palm Island on Kickstarter. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. So Palm Island is a portable game you play right in the palm of your hand. See, Palm Island jokes. Those are real funny. So it has just 17 cards. That's all you need to play the game in its most basic form. It does play solo, cooperative, or competitively. And we even have what we call feats, which are achievements you can unlock as you play the solo mode. When you play, each card has four different states. It has a top, a bottom, and then on the other side it has a top and a bottom that when you rotate or flip the cards, they transform, creating this kind of deck transformer game in just 17 cards. So you can build your whole village. You play the role of like a chief, upgrading, grabbing more prestige points, things of that nature. And you have to kind of constantly be making a debate whether you're going to invest in points or in resources to be able to produce more. And you go through your deck eight times in a whole game, and so you're building this kind of rapport with your deck, because you upgrade a certain card in the beginning, and then you know next time you come around you're going to have that card again, or be able to prepare for the next thing that you're working on while you're playing the game.
Okay, and then when you say how does the transform work on the cards?
So each card has action icons on them. They can have one of three, up to three. There is store, which when you store it, you take the card and you stick it out of the side of your deck. You put it in the back and move it sideways. So it has pictures that stick out of the side so you can see what icons you have, which show your resources. You have either fish, log, or stone, and you use those resources to pay for other actions, such as rotate, which is the other one. You rotate the card, put it in the back, and that will cost you probably resource most of the time. It depends on the card. Each one is a little bit different. The last action you could take with the card is flip. And they all have the symbols. Some don't flip, some don't rotate, depending on where they're at. Because, for instance, there's, like, if we look at the temple, they have a very linear path. They start off, all cards start off, there's a symbol that goes in the top left. And that's the starting location of the card. That puts it at level zero. For a temple, it's very linear. You start with it in this first position, you rotate, then you flip, then you rotate again. So it has four different states and you go from one to four, where the canoe house has kind of two different paths. You can upgrade it to either turn it into double fish from a one fish, or turn it into a fish in a log. So depending on what you need, you can take either one of those paths, and one of them says rotate, the other one says flip. Then when you flip it, it has the last state will rotate. If you had rotated it first, the last state you get to by flipping. So it has two different paths, and that one only has basically three states it will travel through, but two ways to get to the end point.
Gotcha. So how do you score points in the game?
So each building has opportunities. Some buildings don't. Like, for instance, the Kunal House I was just sharing about, it can produce a lot of resources, but it gives you no victory points. Other ones, like the quarries or the lumber yards, those can get a little bit of victory points, but really you want to go for, like, the temples and the villages, or I'm sorry, temples and the housing in your village. Both of those cards give you victory points as you upgrade them, and they have, like I said, the linear path going from, like, the temple goes from 0, 3, 6, 10 points. So then that's how you gain points. They have a little icon on the side. It makes it really easy. Just fan out the cards at the end and look at all those icons, add them up real quick, and that's your score.
So how do the feat cards play into everything?
So when you're playing by yourself, this is such a quick game. I can play it in about 8 minutes. That's what I've got it down to now. I played
a
lot. So most people, when they play for the first time, it takes about 15, 20 minutes because you're getting used to a lot of the cards. You need to flip a lot of them over. There's a lot of repeat cards in there. So once you get familiar with one of them, they're all the same all the way through. And there's not that many different types of cards. There are canoe houses, there are loggers, there are quarries, there are two different types of markets, and then there are the villages, or I call them village. They are the housing and the temples, and those are all the cards that are in there. And then a round tracker. The round tracker flips over and tells you what round you're on. When you get to round eight, then you're done. The feats is what you were asking about.
Yeah.
So all of these cards kind of work together in different ways, and when you start, you shuffle the deck. Now, the reason I added feats in there is because it is such a quick game. You can get very good at playing a specific way. However, when you shuffle it, those opportunities might not always be available.
Right.
So going after those big points in the temple might not be the best path with a certain type of shuffle. You may either have those temples right next to each other, or you might find that you're just not getting the right resources at the right times to be able to upgrade to get the right stuff for that temple upgrade at a given moment. So with a certain shuffle, you should altogether maybe ignore temples. And so I designed the feats so that it would encourage people to play different ways. So some of them say, well, you have to upgrade 3 loggers to level 2 and score 30 points, something like that. So if you do that, you earn that feat and you can use it in all future games as a special ability. It also is kind of a reward and a different way to play to allow you to keep the game fresh over many games. Like I said, I can play it really quick, but now I can have something to go for. And I'm like, once I earn that one, I can use that cool power and try out some new stuff. So it encourages you to play different ways because it is a very simple game, but there are lots of ways to approach it.
Yeah, and I kind of almost look at them almost like achievements. So you have to reach a certain score with this other win condition in there to be able to unlock these cards and then continue using
them. Yeah, it gives it almost like a campaign or a legacy effect to it as well.
Yeah, and then so how does the co-op mode work?
Okay, so co-op is, you use, just like I explained, you use the same decks. We each would get a deck. So you would have a deck and I'd have a deck, and we would work on preparing for disasters. So there's a famine, a hurricane, and a eruption. We pick which one we want to go for. They scale in difficulty. The three are different levels of difficulty. So if we went for the famine, that's one of the easier ones. It needs a lot of fish. So you might say, I look at my deck, I see I can produce a lot of fish. So then I would decide to maybe not produce so many fish and invest my resources there because you said you wanted to do the fish. So when we get to the end of the round, if we have the right resources stored, we can pay them to flip over or rotate, depending on where we're at, the co-op card and push it towards another linear path through the four states to the resolved icon, which is a big green check mark. And if we get that done before the end of the game, at 8 rounds, then we win. And we can score ourselves on our win too as well. It has a win-loss condition, but if you want, you can also look at your scores and see how well you did.
And if I remember correctly, I think there's a head-to-head mode as well?
There is. So there's two ways to play competitively. So there's a speed mode, and that's really only good for people who really know the game well. You rush your way through the deck, and it's designed for you to make mistakes, hopefully. So you're rushing to get the victory points first. When you get to the end of the round, you shout done, or you can say it, depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
you say that you're done, and then you get the first right to buy a diminishing amount of, you get to buy from the stack that has diminishing values, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it starts at 4, then 3, then 2. So if I buy the first one, I'm getting more points for the same cost than you'll get later, you know. So I want to rush to get to the end. If I have the right resources to buy it, then I can get it. And it's always a flat one of everything. So first round, you're going to have a hard time getting it. But if you sacrifice and use a market first round, you can grab that. But it's going to hinder my progress. So you might say, well, go ahead, John. You can go ahead and do that, take that 4 points. But I'm going to work on my deck and get more points than you would get with those bonuses. Now, that's debatable whether you could, and that's the great thing about it. It's like a multiple pass to the victory thing. There also is casual.
Okay.
Casual is definitely more laid back. Both of these modes, what you do is you line up all your cards by number. So I shuffle my deck, and then we just line it up so we have the exact same deck set up. So that way someone doesn't have an unfair advantage. I mean, of course you could play it with shuffles, but someone will probably have a different opportunity than you would have. The casual mode, though, is when we get to the end of the round, it's not speed. When we get to the end of the round, we check a certain criteria. Like, for instance, one of them says 3 loggers to level 1. So I would see, I should maybe focus on loggers earlier than I normally do so I can get that bonus. At the end of the round, we would check our criteria. Maybe I have 2 of them upgraded, but you have all 3. If that's the case, then you get that bonus.
Gotcha.
If we both have it, nobody gets the bonus and it gets discarded, which is, of course, the same as both of us getting the bonus.
Oh, very cool. So what's the age entry on this one?
Okay, so this one I do play with my kids. So my 6-year-olds, they can't, they also don't have quite the interest in it. But my 8-year-old loves the game. always asks. I only have like a couple prototypes, and he's like, "Can I have Palm Island? Can I have it?" Anytime we're in the car, or whatever, he wants to play it. The biggest challenge with this ends up being your hands, because it is a very different way of holding the cards. And I am working. I was actually kind of upset and concerned about is that this actually doesn't have a lot of accessibility. You have to have use of both of your hands.
Right.
And so I wanted to have some sort of opportunity to figure out how to make it so someone could just use one hand to be able to manipulate the cards. And so I am working on designing a like a wooden or 3D printed holder that allows you to slide them in there. I mean, I'm very concerned about this stuff because I'm also, I work, my day job, this is a side hustle for me. My day job, I work for a nonprofit called Friendship Circle. We work with children with special needs and their families. And so, I mean, I'm kind of in the middle of that. So I'm you know, definitely more. So that's something that I was like, oh, I really wish that this happened. And a lot of other games, it's not too much of a concern because you would just put it on the table, you know. So it is filling a new niche, but I don't want to forget about all the different people that are out there playing games, you know. Which brings another thing, too, that I found through this that was very cool, I guess I'll share, was that having such a mobile game, I had people contact me through playtesting and say, thank you for making this. And this isn't a brag on me, but to say that as designers, we need to be conscious of all the different people from all the different walks of life and how we can be providing entertainment for not just one type of gamer.
Right.
So I had people who had either didn't have surfaces in their house or that they were traveling too much, spending time at the hospital with family members, who were like, this game is perfect for my family. And so to me, that's like, how have we been missing this? You know, we need to be looking at other opportunities to be more inclusive in the game community.
Right, and it's super small, super portable. You could easily pop it in a backpack, briefcase, keep it in your car or purse or something, and take it anywhere. And if you're waiting in line or waiting in a, you know, if you're
it's great too for the kids in the van.
Yeah.
I mean, I have 8 kids and we got a big van, and so it's like great to be able to give them something else to work on that's not another screen.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because though I don't have anything necessarily against video games, we always have time limits that they have, so everybody gets an hour a day that they can use, unless they a weekend they get 2. They're so excited for it.
Right.
But anyways, they get a certain amount of time to play. And so with this, to me, it's also, at least there's some games I definitely would approve of, you know, more that they spend more time with. So we say educational games, you can play longer. Anyway, I'm sorry. I don't mean to get too distracted in this thing. But with this, it's that you can go ahead and pass it back to them and say, or they can have their own set and they can play with it while you're in a car ride and stuff. It's perfect for that, you know.
It gets their brain working, not just staring out the window or just like you said, staring into a device.
Right.
Get them thinking. Cool. Then can you tell us about what else you have coming up in the works?
So I have another game called Planetoid, which again is something I wanted to focus on family with as well. I have young boys who like strategy games and stuff, a few that who don't. So I want to cater to different levels of skill, as well as make it for, because not just for kids, but we also have in the game industry in general, a lot of different people who like different levels of games. And especially I notice in my game groups that I have people who are new to this and they're not quite ready to be called a gamer.
Right. Or they're like heavier style.
Yeah, they're like they don't want to be the nerd of my level yet. But hopefully soon we can convert them. but with that too, having a more casual game opportunity in the same game. So I'm working on a game called Planetoid, and this game has 2 different versions in the same game, as the basic and the advanced. You're mining asteroids for minerals, and the basic trick to it is when you mine a resource and take it out of the map, you get to keep it, but it exposes all of the resources around it. So it's this grid of tiles on a circular board, and I got to be careful about where I drill because I might expose a high value resource for you. So I have to kind of think ahead and use my other abilities, such as I have a scan action that lets me look at tiles and put them back and then charge up extra ability to do a drill later. So I might want to use that to really know where it is that I'm exposing, or at the very least, that I know I'm getting something good rather than just diving in blindly. So that's like the casual mode. The advanced mode has more of like an action point system that allows you to devote resources in kind of strategic combinations, so you can use your 3 energy to first do like a quick scan and then drill that one if it's what you want, or be able to prepare to maybe have a diminished turn this turn, but next time you will have a lot more to do because you can charge up, you know, and things of that nature.
Oh, very cool. So when can we expect to see that coming out?
So that's coming out first quarter. Well, it's going to Kickstarter, rather, okay. First quarter of 2019.
Okay, great. And then for our viewers, for our listeners, can you tell us where we can find you online?
You can find me at portaldragon.com, also on Twitter and Facebook's The Portal Dragon.
All right, well, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
No problem. Appreciate Thanks it. For having me.
All right.